Chapter 20. Visitations. The woman who came in, dressed all in white silk and silver, shut the door behind her and leaned back against it to study him with the darkest eyes Matt had ever seen. She was so beautiful he almost forgot to breathe, with hair as black as night held by a finely woven silver band, and as graceful in repose as another woman would be dancing. He halfway thought that he knew her, but he rejected the idea out of hand. No man could ever forget a woman like her.
"You may be passable, I suppose, once you fill out again," she said. "But for now, perhaps you could put on something?"
For an instant, Matt continued to stare at her. Then suddenly he realized he was standing there naked. Face scarlet, he shambled to the bed, pulled the blanket around himself like a cloak, and more fell than sat down on the edge of the mattress.
"I'm sorry for... I mean, I... That is, I didn't expect... I...
He drew a deep breath.
"I apologize for your finding me this way."
He could still feel the heat in his cheeks. For a moment he wished that Rand, whatever he had become, or even Perrin were there to advise him. They always seemed to get on well with women. Even girls who knew that Rand was all but promised to Egwene used to stare at him, and they seemed to think Perrin's slow ways were gentle and attractive. However hard he tried, he always managed to make a fool of himself in front of girls, as he had just done.
"I would not have visited you in this way, Matt, except that I was here in the White Tower."
She smiled as if the name amused her.
"For another purpose, and I wanted to see all of you."
Matt's face reddened again, and he tugged the blanket around him tighter, but she seemed not to have been teasing him. More graceful than a swan, she glided to the table.
"You are hungry. That's to be expected, the way they do things. Make sure you eat all they give you. You will be surprised at how quickly you put weight back and regain your strength."
"Pardon," Matt said diffidently, "but do I know you? Meaning no offense, but you seem familiar."
She looked at him until he began to shift uneasily. A woman like her would expect to be remembered.
"You may have seen me," she said finally, "somewhere. Call me Selene."
Her head tilted slightly. She appeared to be waiting for him to recognize the name. It tugged at the edges of memory. He thought he must have heard it before, but he could not say when or where.
"Are you an Aes Sedai, Selene?"
"No."
The word was soft, but surprisingly emphatic. For the first time, he studied her, able now to see more than her beauty. She was almost as tall as he was, slender and, he suspected from the way she moved, strong. He was not sure of her age, a year or two older than he, or maybe as much as 10, but her cheeks were smooth. Her necklace of smooth white stones and woven silver matched her wide belt, but she did not wear a great serpent ring. The absence should not have surprised him. No Aes Sedai would ever say right out that she was not. Yet it did. There was an air about her, a self-confidence, a surety in her own power to match any queen's, and something more, that he associated with Aes Sedai.
"You aren't by any chance a novice, are you?"
He had heard that novices wore white, but he could not really believe it of her.
"She makes Elaine look like a cringer."
Elaine. Another name drifting into his head.
"Hardly that," Selene said with a wry twist to her mouth. "Let us just say that I am someone whose interests coincide with yours. These Aes Sedai mean to use you. But you will like it in the main, I think, and accept it. There is no need to convince you to seek out glory."
"Use me?" The memory returned to him of thinking that, but about Rand, that the Aes Sedai meant to use Rand, not him.
"They've no bloody use for me. Like they can't have."
"What do you mean? I'm no one important. I'm no use to anyone but myself. What kind of glory?"
"I knew that would pull you. you above all.
Her smile made his head spin. He scrubbed a hand through his hair. The blanket slipped, and he caught it hastily before it could fall.
Now listen, they are not interested in me.
What about me sounding the horn?
I am just a farmer.
Maybe they think I'm tied to Rand in some way.
No, Varen said.
He was not sure what Varen had said, or Moraine, but he thought most Aes Sedai knew nothing at all about Rand. He wanted to keep it that way, at least until he was a long way gone.
Just a simple country man. I only want to see a little of the world and go back to my Da's farm.
What does she mean, glory?
Celine shook her head as if she had heard his thoughts.
You are more important than you yet know. Certainly more important than these so-called Aes Sedai know. You can have glory, if you know enough not to trust them.
You certainly sound as if you don't trust them.
So-called?
A thought came to him, but he could not manage to say it.
Are you...
It was not the kind of thing you accused someone of.
A dark friend, Celine said mockingly.
She sounded amused, not angered. She sounded contemptuous.
One of those pathetic followers of Baal-Zaman who think he will give them immortality and power? I follow no one. There is one man I could stand beside, but I do not follow.
Matt laughed nervously.
Of course not. Blood and ashes. A dark friend wouldn't name herself dark friend. Probably has a poisoned knife if she is.
He had a vague memory of a woman dressed as one nobly born, a dark friend with a deadly dagger in her slender hand.
That wasn't what I meant at all. You look like a queen. That's what I meant. Are you a lady?
Matt, you must learn to trust me. Oh, I will use you too.
You have too suspicious a nature, especially since carrying that dagger for me to deny it. But my use will gain you wealth and power and glory. I will not compel you. I have always believed men perform better if convinced rather than forced. These Aes Sedai do not even realize how important you are, and he will try to dissuade or kill you. But I can give you what you desire. He, Matt said sharply. Kill me? Light, it's Rand thereafter, not me. How does she know about the dagger? I suppose the whole tower knows. Who wants to kill me?
Celine's mouth tightened as if she had said too much.
You know what you want, Matt, and I know it every bit as well as you. You must choose who you will trust to gain it for you. I admit I will use you. These Aes Sedai will never do that. I will lead you to wealth and glory. They will keep you tied to a leash until you die.
You say a lot, Matt said, but how do I know any of it is true? How do I know I can trust you any more than I can them?
By listening to what they tell you and what they do not.
Will they tell you your father came to Tar-Valon?
My Da was here?
A man called Abul-Kothan, and another named Tam-Al-Thor. They made nuisances of themselves until they gained an audience, I have heard, wanting to know where you and your friends were. And Swan Sanche sent them back to the Two Rivers with empty hands, not even letting them know you were alive. Will they tell you that, unless you ask? Perhaps not even then, for you might try to run away back home.
My Da thinks I am dead, Matt said slowly.
He can be told you live, I can see to it. Think on who to trust, Matt Cawthon. Will they tell you that even now Randall Thor is trying to escape, and the one called Moraine is hunting him? Will they tell you that the Black Aja infests their precious white tower? Will they even tell you how they mean to use you?
Rand is trying to escape, but...
Maybe she knew Rand had proclaimed himself the Dragon Reborn, and maybe she did not, but he would not tell her.
The Black Adja. Blood and bloody ashes. Who are you, Selene? If you're not Aes Sedai, what are you?
Her smile hid secrets.
Just remember that there is another choice. You need not be a puppet for the White Tower or pray for Baalzaman's dark friends. The world is more complex than you can imagine. Do as these Aes Sedai wish for the present, but remember your choices. Will you do that?
I don't see that I have much choice at all, he said glumly. I suppose I will.
Selene's look sharpened. Friendliness sloughed off her voice like an old snakeskin.
Suppose? I did not come to you like this, talk in this way, for suppose, Matrim Cawthon.
She stretched out a slim hand. Her hand was empty, and she stood halfway across the room, but he leaned back, away from her hand, as if she were right on top of him with a dagger. He did not know why, really, except that there was a threat in her eyes, and he was sure it was real. His skin began to tingle, and his headache returned. Suddenly, tingle and pain vanished together, and Selene's head whipped around as if listening to something beyond the walls. A tiny frown appeared on her face, and she lowered her hand. The frown vanished.
We will talk again, Matt. I have much to say to you. Remember your choices. Remember that there are many hands that would kill you. I alone guarantee you life and all you seek, if you do as I say.
She slipped out of the door as silently and gracefully as she had entered. Matt let out a long breath. Sweat ran down his face.
Who in the light is she?
A dark friend, perhaps. Except that she had sounded as contemptuous of Baalzaman as she was of Aes Sedai. Dark friend spoke of Baalzaman the way anyone else might speak of the Creator. And she had not asked him to conceal her visit from the Aes Sedai.
Right, he thought sourly. Pardon me, Aes Sedai, but this woman came to see me. She wasn't Aes Sedai, but I think maybe she started to use the one power on me, and she said she wasn't a dark friend. But she did say you mean to use me and the Black Ajahs in your tower. Oh, and she said I'm important. I don't know how. You don't mind if I leave now, do you?
Going was beginning to be a better idea by the minute. He slid awkwardly off the bed and made his way unsteadily to the wardrobe, still clutching his blanket around him. His boots were on the floor inside, and his cloak hung from a peg under his belt, with pouch and sheathed belt knife. It was just an ordinary country knife, with a stout blade, but it could do as much as any fine dagger. The rest of his clothes, two sturdy wool coats, three pairs of breeches, half a dozen linen shirts and small clothes, had been brushed or washed as required and neatly folded on the shelves that took up one side of the wardrobe. He felt the pouch hanging from the belt, but it was empty. Its contents lay jumbled on a shelf with what had been emptied from his pockets. He brushed aside a red hawk's feather, a smooth, striped rock he had liked the colors of, his razor and his bone-handled pocket knife, and freed his wash-leather purse from some coils of spare bowstring. When he tugged it open, he found his memory had been all too good in this instance.
Two silver marks and a handful of copper, he muttered. I won't get far on that.
Once it would have seemed a small fortune to him, but that had been before he left Emmons Field. He stopped to peer back into the shelf.
Where are they?
He began to be afraid the Aes Sedai might have thrown them out, the way his mother would if she had ever found them.
Where?
He felt a surge of relief. Way in the back, behind his tinderbox and ball of twine for snares and the like, were his two leather dice cups. They rattled as he pulled them out, but he still popped off the tight-fitting round caps. Everything was as it should be. Five dice carved with symbols for crowns, and five marked with spots. The spotted dice would do for a number of games, but more men seemed to play crowns than anything else. With these, his two marks would be enough to take him far away from Tarvalin.
Away from Aes Sedai and Selene both.
A peremptory knock was followed immediately by the door opening. He whirled around. The Amelin Seat and the Keeper of the Chronicles were entering. He would have recognized them even without the Amerlin's broad-striped stole and the Keeper's narrower blue stole. He had seen them once and only once, a long way from Tarvalin, but he could not forget the two most powerful women among the Aes Sedai. The Ammerlin's eyebrows rose at the sight of him standing there, with the blanket hanging from his shoulders and his purse and dice cups in his hands.
"I don't think you will need those for a while yet, my son," she said dryly. "Put them up and get back to bed before you fall on your face."
He hesitated, his back stiffening, but his knees chose that moment to wobble, and the two Aes Sedai were looking at him, dark eyes and blue alike, appearing to read his every rebellious thought. He did as he was told, holding the blanket around him with both hands. He lay down straight as a board, not sure what else he could do.
"How are you feeling?" the Ammerlin asked briskly as she put a hand on his head.
Goosebumps covered his skin. Had she done something with the One Power, or was it being touched by an Aes Sedai that made him feel a chill?
"I'm fine," he told her. "Why, I'm ready to be on my way. Just let me say goodbye to Egwene and Nynaeve, and I'll be out of your hair. I mean, I will go, mother."
Moraine and Varen had not seemed to care much how he talked, but this was the Ammerlin seat, after all.
"Nonsense," the Ammerlin said.
She pulled the high-backed chair around, closer to the bed, and sat addressing Lyanna.
"Men always seem to refuse to admit they are sick until they're sick enough to make twice as much work for women. Then they claim they're well too soon, with the same result."
The keeper glanced at Matt and nodded.
"Yes, mother. Yet this one cannot claim he is well when he can barely stand up. At least he has eaten everything on his tray. I'd be surprised if he had left enough crumbs to interest a finch. And still hungry, unless I miss my guess.
I could have someone bring him a pie, mother, or some cakes."
"No, I think he has had as much as he can hold for now. If he brings it all back up, it won't do him any good."
Matt scowled. It seemed to him that when you got sick, you became invisible to women unless they were actually talking to you. And then they took at least 10 years off your age. Nynaeve, his mother, his sisters, the Ammerlin seat, they all did it.
"I'm not hungry at all," he announced. "I'm fine. If you will let me put my clothes on, I'll show you how well I am. I will be out of here before you know it."
They were both looking at him now. He cleared his throat.
Mother.
The Ammerlin snorted.
"You've eaten a meal for 5, and you will eat 3 or 4 like it every day, for days yet. Or else you will starve to death. You've just been healed from a link to the evil that killed every man, woman, and child in Aredhol, and no less strong for near 2,000 years waiting for you to pick it up. It was killing you just as surely as it killed them. That is not like having a fish spine stuck in your thumb, boy. We very nearly killed you ourselves trying to save you."
"I am not hungry," he maintained.
His stomach growled loudly to give him the lie.
"I read you aright the first time I saw you," the Ammerlin said. "I knew right then you'd bolt like a startled fisher bird if you ever thought someone was trying to hold you. As well I took precautions."
He eyed them warily.
"Precautions?"
They looked back, all serenity. He felt as if their eyes were pinning him to the bed.
"Your name and description are on their way to the bridge guards," the Ammerlin said, "and the dock masters. I'll not try to hold you inside the tower, but you will not leave Tarvalen unless you are well. Should you try to hide in the city, hunger will drive you back here eventually, or if it doesn't, we will find you before you starve."
"Why do you want to keep me here so badly?" he demanded.
He heard Celine's voice.
"They want to use you."
"Why should you care whether I starve or not? I can feed myself."
The Ammerlin gave a small laugh with little amusement in it.
"With 2 silver marks and a handful of copper, my son, your dice would need to be very lucky indeed to buy all the food you'll need in the next few days. We do not heal people, then let them waste our efforts by dying while they still need care. In addition to which, you may yet need more healing."
"More? You said you had healed me. Why should I need more?"
"My son, you carried that dagger for months. I believe we dug every trace of it out of you, but if we missed even the smallest speck, it could still be fatal. And who knows what effect your having it in your possession so long may have. Half a year from now, a year, and you may wish you had an Aes Sedai to hand to heal you again.
You want me to stay here a year? He said incredulously, and loudly.
Lyanna shifted her feet and eyed him sharply, but the Amalyn's calm features were unruffled. Perhaps not so long as that, my son. Long enough to be certain, though. Surely you want as much. Would you set sail in a boat when you didn't know whether the caulking would hold or whether a plank might be rotten?
I never had much to do with boats, Matt muttered.
It might be true. Aes Sedai never lied, but there were too many mites and mays in it for him. I've been gone from home a long time, Mother. My mother probably think I am dead.
If you wish to write a letter to them, I will see that it is carried to Emmons Field.
Matt waited for more, but no more came.
Thank you, Mother.
He essayed a small laugh.
I'm half surprised my Da did not come looking for me. He's the kind of man who would.
He was not sure, but he thought there was a small hesitation before the Amalyn answered.
He did come. Lyanna spoke to him.
The keeper took it up immediately.
We did not know where you were then, Matt. I told him so, and he left before the heavy snows. I gave him some gold to make the journey home easier.
No doubt, the Amalyn said, he will be pleased to hear from you, and your mother will, certainly. Give me the letter when you have written it, and I will see to it. They had told him, but he had had to ask. And they didn't mention Rand's Da. Maybe because they didn't think I would care, and maybe because... Burn me, I don't know. Who can tell with Aes Sedai?
I was traveling with a friend, Mother. Randolph Thor, you remember him. Do you know if he is all right? I bet his Da is worried, too.
As far as I know, the Amalyn said smoothly, the boy is well enough, but who can say? I have seen him only once, the time I saw you in Faldara.
She turned to the keeper.
Perhaps he could do with a small piece of pie, Lyanna, and something for his throat if he is going to do all this talking. Will you see that it is brought to him?
The tall Aes Sedai left with a murmured, As you command, Mother.
When the Amalyn turned back to Matt, she was smiling, but her eyes were blue ice. There are things it would be dangerous for you to talk about, perhaps even in front of Lyanna. A flapping tongue has killed more men than sudden storms ever did.
Dangerous, Mother?
His mouth felt suddenly parched, but he resisted the urge to lick his lips.
Light! How much does she know about Rand? If only Moraine didn't keep so many secrets!
Mother, I don't know anything dangerous. I can hardly remember half of what I do know.
Do you remember the horn?
What horn is that, Mother? She was on her feet and looming over him so fast he hardly saw her move.
You play games with me, boy, and I will make you weep for your mother to come running. I have no time for games, and neither do you. Now do you remember?
Clutching the blanket tightly around him, he had to swallow before he could say,
I remember, Mother.
She seemed to relax just a little, and Matt shrugged his shoulders queasily. He felt as if he had just been allowed to lift them off a chopping block.
Good. That is good, Matt.
She sat back down slowly, studying him.
Do you know that you are linked to the horn?
He mouthed the word linked silently, shocked, and she nodded.
I did not think you knew. You were the first to blow the horn of Valir after it was found. For you, it will summon dead heroes back from the grave. For anyone else, it is only a horn, so long as you live.
He took a deep breath.
So long as I live, he said in a dull voice, and the Amalyn nodded. You could have let me die.
She nodded again.
Then you could have had anyone you want blow it, and it would have worked for them. Another nod.
Blood and ashes!
You mean me to blow it for you? When the last battle comes, you mean me to call heroes back from the grave to fight the Dark One for you?
Blood and bloody ashes!
She put an elbow on the arm of the chair and propped her chin on her hand. Her eyes never left him.
Would you prefer the alternative?
He frowned, then remembered what the alternative was. If someone else had to sound the horn.
You want me to blow the horn?
Then I'll blow the horn. I never said I would not, did I? The Ammerlin gave an exasperated sigh.
You remind me of my Uncle Juan. No one could ever pin him down. He liked to gamble, too, and he'd much rather have fun than work.
He died pulling children out of a burning house. He wouldn't stop going back as long as there was one left inside.
Are you like him, Matt? Will you be there when the flames are high?
He could not meet her eyes. He studied his fingers as they plucked irritably at his blanket.
I'm no hero. I do what I have to do, but I am no hero.
Most of those we call heroes only did what they had to do. I suppose it will have to be enough, for now. You must not speak to anyone but me of the horn, my son, or of your link to it.
For now, he thought. It's all you're bloody going to get, now or ever.
I don't mean to bloody tell every... She arched an eyebrow, and he made his voice smooth again.
I do not want to tell anyone. I wish nobody knew.
Why do you want to keep it such a secret? Don't you trust your Aes Sedai? For a long moment, he thought he had gone too far. Her face hardened, and her look could have carved axe handles.
If I could make it so that only you and I knew, she said coldly, I would.
The more people know a thing, the more the knowledge spreads, even with the best will. Most of the world believes the Horn of Elir is only legend, and those who know better believe one of the hunters has yet to find it. But Shael Ghul knows it has been found, and that means at least some dark friends know. But they do not know where it is, and if the light shines in us, they do not know you sounded it. Do you really want dark friends coming after you? Half-men or other shadow spawn? They want the horn. You must know that. It will work as well for the shadow as for the light. But if it is to work for them, they must take you or kill you. Do you want to risk that? Matt wished he had another blanket and maybe a goose-down comforter. The room suddenly felt very cold.
Are you telling me dark friends could come after me here? I thought the White Tower could keep dark friends out.
He remembered what Celine had said about the Black Adja and wondered what the Ammerlin would say to that.
A good reason to stay, wouldn't you say?
She got to her feet, smoothing her skirts.
Rest, my son. Soon you will feel much better. Rest.
She closed the door softly behind her. For a long time, Matt lay staring up at the ceiling. He barely noticed when a serving woman came with his piece of pie and another pitcher of milk, taking the tray of empty dishes when she went. His stomach rumbled loudly at the warm smell of apples and spices, but he paid that no mind either. The Ammerlin thought she held him like a sheep in a pen. And Celine?
Who in the light is she? What does she want?
Celine had been right about some things, but the Ammerlin had told him she meant to use him and how. In a way. There were too many holes in what she had said to suit him, too many holes she could slip something deadly through. The Ammerlin wanted something, and Celine wanted something, and he was the rope they were tugging between them. He thought he would rather face Trollocs than be caught between those two. There had to be a way out of Tarvalin, a way out of both their grasps. Once he was beyond the river, he could keep out of Aes Sedai hands and Celine's and dark friends, too. He was sure of it. There had to be a way. All he had to do was think about it from every angle.
The pie grew cold on the table.